Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 54 of the GCSAA podcast, presented in partnership with Enview. To learn more about the company and its offerings in the golf industry, go to us.enview.com and look for the Turf and Ornamentals Management tab at the top of the page. I'm your host, Scott Hollister, the editor-in-chief of GCSAA's Golf Course Management Magazine, and I appreciate you joining us for this episode of the podcast. You know, since the inception of this podcast, we've been lucky enough to have the folks at first Bear and now Enview supporting what we're doing in this space. And because of that partnership, we've had access to some of the brightest folks in our industry who ply their trade for Enview. Folks who've been able to come on the podcast to share their thoughts on emerging trends, cutting edge technologies, and tips and tricks that help superintendents do their jobs better, smarter, and faster. And on this episode of the GCSAA podcast, we're going to do that again by welcoming Zach Riker, PhD, as our guest. Zach is a Green Solutions team specialist for Enview, who focuses on cool season turf grass and weed control for superintendents in the western half of the U.S. Zach has a deep background in academia and decades of experience in the business. And I think we're all going to learn a lot about what's going on, not only at Enview, but also out in the field in the summer of 2023 during this conversation with Zach Riker. Before we get going, a reminder to check out the new video version of the podcast that's available on both GCSAA TV and GCSAA's YouTube channel. This marks the fifth episode with a video companion, and we're excited about some of the cool things we're able to do in that space. So please take some time to explore the video versions of the GCSAA podcast if you haven't already. And with that, it is time to get after it. This is episode 54 of the GCSAA podcast featuring Enview's Zach Riker. Hope you enjoy it. All right. Well, excited to be joined today by Zach Riker, PhD. Zach, a member of Enview's Green Solutions team. He's been with them since 2015, a longtime GCSA member. Zach is on Twitter at Zach Turf Guy, but Zach, or Twitter X, whatever we're calling it today. Zach, I know you are not much of an avid Twitter user. I feel a kinship.
I'm not a huge Twitter. I can barely keep up with texts and email and everything else. And so, called me an old fuddy duddy. But yeah, I'm more of a stalker on Twitter. You know, I'm more of a reader than a.
I do the same both personally and professionally. So I mean, obviously it's. You know, for superintendents and turf grass managers, Twitter's just built into a pretty amazing community.
It's great. Fabulous.
Share tips, tricks, all that fun stuff, bitch, moan, whatever they're doing. But it's a pretty amazing place. But I do the same thing both personally and professionally. So Zach has got a master's from Iowa State, PhD from Purdue. Spent a lot of years in academia before starting with Enview. We will touch on all of that. But Zach, you know, some of your colleagues at Enview have been on the podcast before. And obviously our partnership with the company has kind of given us access to some pretty smart minds. And it's been kind of fun for
you get to the bottom of the barrel now, Scott, in terms of smart
minds. Oh no, we've not saved the best for last because we still got more to go. But for someone like myself, it's enlightening to kind of to talk with you and your colleagues about agronomic issues. I want to start by kind of talking about what you do for the company and maybe just kind of define what is the Green Solutions team. And when customers, superintendents ask you that, you know, that what is this, what do you tell them about what you do and what the kind of the job is?
We're the technical team for Enview. And so primarily we answer questions about our products. But in reality, we answer questions about anything that the superintendents want to talk about, whether it's cultural practices, whether it's somebody else's product. You know, we're all kind of in this together, and that's our philosophy. We're going to help superintendents solve their problems, regardless if it's one of our products or somebody else's products, or might not be a product at all. And so we are, we're a resource, just another resource for the superintendents and you know, mostly unbiased. We like to think that obviously NVU pays our salaries, but we try to be as unbiased as we can. And I'm sure my own salesmen hate it, but we try to be as unbiased as we can. So
do the customers reach out directly to you? Do they reach out through the company, through sales representatives? Typically, how does that work?
I'll get direct calls, texts, emails from superintendents. Often they're former students. Often they're superintendents that I stopped in to see. And friends of mine, I was in extension at both Purdue and Nebraska for 27 years or something like that. So I've stumbled onto a few people. And so it often goes that way. Sometimes distributors will contact me directly, and often my own sales guys. And I cover everything, 22 states west of the Mississippi. And so I have 8 salespeople that are in my region that will often contact me and be the go-between between the superintendent and myself.
Well, I imagine that will keep you busy. And how much are you traveling? How much are you working? You're at home right now near Lincoln, Nebraska, but yep. How does that, I imagine you're spending quite a bit of time on the road, but how does that break down for you?
Scott, the best part of my job is traveling to see golf courses. Because honestly, one day I can be in Minnesota, the next day I can be in the Rockies in Colorado, the next day I'm in Portland, and I finish it off in Hawaii. And, I'm not that smart to understand all of those paths, and so I have to be there to see them and touch them and smell them. I probably average 110 nights on the road. Okay. And that doesn't include all the nights that I take the last flight back out of Salt Lake, right. Which is always my connection to Omaha, and I get home at 2:00. So I had my first year, I had 140 nights on the road after, Rob Golombieski is the one that lured me into Bear. And he told me, yeah, I think you'll probably spend 40, 45 nights on the road. And my first year was 140. Like, really, Rob?
Well, the road warriors never sleep, and I know that's it's a price that you pay personally, but it's I know a pretty important one for the company and a great connection for the end users and superintendents.
Scott, you got to be out there. You absolutely have to be out there. You have to be out. In my opinion, again, I'm not smart enough just to read emails and see the picture. I want to be out there. I want to see it. I want to see what guys are dealing with. And and that's the part of it. I hate to travel, but I love it when I get there. Like most people.
That's right. Yeah, that's a pretty common. I would share your sentiments there. So within the technical services group there, and you can kind of help me clean this up just a bit, but you've got some fellow Green Solutions team specialists, Todd Lowe, Jesse Benelli, Jane Stanley, who I believe kind of focuses on ornamentals. You've got a couple of product development managers, James Hempfling, Devin Carroll, and then there are field solutions specialists, Patrick Burgess, who has preceded you on this podcast, Patrick Maxwell, Sherry Wells, Travis Russell. Maybe how do you all work together and kind of the structure that you guys have? How do you think that sets you guys apart from maybe other, most other companies, whether they're providing inputs or equipment, will have some level of technical support for their customers. How does what NVU does differ from maybe what superintendents might be used to from other organizations?
I think probably we're pretty similar to what Syngenta has. And so we have a distinct, we operate on the sales side. We're what's called commercial operations. And so we answer to sales managers, and our primary responsibility is work with the sales. And so we bring technical support to the sales. Then all those folks that you named off, which are really good folks, all of our development reps, they are working on the development side of things. And so their job is to bring products to market. And then once they get a label, then they hand those products off to us. We help advertise the products. We help keep them in front and center. And then we're also the ones that are looking at label expansions, things like, things that happen after a product comes out. Superintendents are great experimenters. They come up with ideas well beyond what we do. And so those development folks, they bring products to market, and then they hand it off to us once it gets to the market. And then, you know, that we're in constant communication during that handoff. And then we're also working, you know, they're working with the universities. We're working with the universities. And so there's lots of interaction with us. Great folks. I had just a wonderful time at NVU. All of the people that I've been working with, just incredibly professional, competent folks. It's been a blast, absolutely blast working here the last 8.5 years, it seems like.
Yeah, and you touched on your background in extension work and with universities. You had a full career there as well. I'm curious, do you ever miss what you did in that previous life, have there been things in your current job that have allowed you to do the favorite parts of your job and just kind of continue that on only now under the NVU banner?
Yeah, I was most of my job, certainly at Purdue, was primarily extension. So I travel a lot. I was certainly within the state or, you know, 3 or 4 state region. So I was out with superintendents and, you know, athletic field managers like your son and lawn care operators. I was out all the time. And you know, that was the best part of my job. And then at Nebraska, I did more teaching, but I was still out, you know, out in the Sand Hills or in Omaha, wherever the golf courses or lawn care guys needed me to go. And so this job is our little secret. This job is just an extension of what I was doing in extension. And so it just allows me to work with the professionals and help them get done what they need to get done.
And instead of going to the Sand Hills, now you can add the Hawaii to that.
I can add lots
San Diego,
of
just, wherever else.
Just incredible. Water. You know, Scott, again, I cover everything west of the Mississippi, and the diversity west of Mississippi, I have all of the species known to man, turfgrass species known to man. I have all of the pest problems known to man. And so it is incredibly diverse. It is just, it is an absolute ride. And the golf courses that I get to see, it's humbling. And I'm sure, you know, golfers out there would just be salivating, you know, as I tell people some of the golf courses that I've been on. I don't play golf anymore. I gave it up, you know, when I took up bow hunting, heads behind me, more or less gave up golf. But the courses that I'm on, I still love being on golf courses. And I love playing golf. Whenever I got the opportunity, I still love to play. Not quite as good as I was at one time.
Right. Right. Well, I think, you know, it's always a funny about the people who work in golf are often the times who people get to the people who get to play the least amount of golf. And I've run hot and cold, and I've done my darndest to kind of get back out there and play. But I certainly understand why you haven't. I want to talk a little bit about, I don't want to embarrass you too much, but we'll talk a little bit about you and your career and just kind of your background. Where did you grow up? And where did your interest in turf grass, in golf, however that happened, where did that interest begin?
So I grew up in Dyersville, Iowa, far eastern Iowa, and had been playing golf. I came from a golfing family. And actually, my dad, by the time he passed, he had 7 holes in one.
Wow.
Impressive. Yeah. And so I came from a golfing family. And then growing up in eastern Iowa, about the age of 15, I figured out that growing up in Iowa, not many guys become professional golfers.
Yeah.
And that was pre Zach Johnson. And so now that, you know, shows that I'm wrong. But and so at the age of 15, I said, OK, this probably isn't going to pay. And so I applied for just an hourly job at my local Dyersville Golf and Country Club that I played, that my mom and dad were members of. And so I applied for the job, and the only qualifications I had was that I could run a push mower. And my sister at the time was going to Iowa State as a turf student. Okay. And how many 21-year-old college women talk to their 15-year-old brothers?
Yeah.
Not so much.
Not a lot.
So that really had nothing to do with my skill. And so they hired me. And a day late, well, actually, they fired the pro superintendent and they hired me the next day. And so the guy on the board of directors, he was the town veterinarian. He owned a farm, so he knew how to run the tractors. I was the 15-year-old kid in town that knew the most about turf because I had a 21-year-old sister at Iowa State. And so I was a shoo-in. And so that's where I started. And within a week, we had 8 out of the 10 greens dead. But that's that's where I started at the age of 15. And you know, it's one of those fluke decisions you kind of make. And I've been truly blessed, absolutely blessed. I would never do it. I would never do it over.
So Dyersville, that's a Field of Dreams, correct?
There you go. That's my line.
That's right.
My introduction line when I talk to people. Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea you were from Dyersville. I have wanted to get up there. I'm a bit of a baseball head.
It's pretty impressive now. I mean, Frank Thomas and his group, have done pretty impressive stuff.
When they've been playing those regular season games up there, that's turned into quite a production.
Small town Iowa, 3,500 people. What more can you ask for? That economic development. They've done a nice job.
That's amazing. So did your sister stay in the business? Is she in turf as well?
She is not. She as she graduated from Iowa State, she married one of her classmates, and they bought a greenhouse in northeast Iowa, and she's doing very, very well up in there. Plant Peddlers is her company up there, and so they now ship all over the Midwest. So she's no longer in turf. Still a good golfer, but no longer in turf. She's a greenhouse person.
She can follow your path and see where she might have gone. You did follow in her footsteps to Iowa State, correct?
Eventually got to Iowa State after a small 1 year stint at St. Ambrose College in Davenport. Okay. I went there on a band scholarship and a golf scholarship as a computer science major. After working 3 years on a golf course during the summers, I'd become a computer science major because I was an idiot. I mean, how many people, so many turf students do that. They start working on a golf course and then in the college, they do something else. But only took me a year to figure out. I got to Iowa State and started working with Nick Christians, and I owe a lot to Nick. Helped me make some decisions, or maybe force some decisions that I might not have ever made. And look at me now.
Did you consider a path as a superintendent, as a sports turf manager at a stadium? Because obviously that was your roots in the business. Did you ever consider that? And what kind of flipped your switch to go into the more research driven, teaching driven side?
Yeah, that's where I can thank or I can curse Nick Christians for that. Because we're just I got pretty decent grades, and Nick says, you should go to graduate school. And it was just matter of fact, you need to go to graduate school. And so then I got my master's with Nick, and I started doing research, and one thing led to another. And so I, you know, even though I had internships and worked on a number of golf courses, I just got on the research track pretty early on.
Do you ever miss that when you're, I mean, because obviously you spend plenty of time with superintendents and sports turf managers and folks like that. Well, probably not as much now, but I'm wondering if you ever got the itch as you were spending that time in extension work and now what you do for MDU.
Yeah, sort of. You know, again, the best time on a golf course is dawn and dusk. Hopefully not in the same day, but nothing beats dawn on the golf course and the peace and the quiet of dawn on the golf course. And I do, I miss those parts. And so maybe that's why I like deer hunting. I see a lot of dawns. Yeah, from the deer stand. So
you probably get some opportunities professionally also to spend some time. I know just from what I get to do, and I spent some time earlier in July at Pebble Beach for the U.S. Women's Open, and I've been fortunate enough and blessed enough to have been there a number of times. Actually, volunteered at the 2000 U.S. Open way back when. I was with a colleague and it was one morning, and we're literally just walking down the middle of the 18th hole. And I'm like, what is happening right now? I mean, we're really getting to do this, and
I'm getting paid to do this. Yeah.
And it is, you do realize, there's obviously a ton of work that we're not around for that we don't, and headaches that go into that, but boy, those moments sure do show you the heel of the job.
I volunteered for the last two U.S. Senior Opens at Omaha Country Club.
Sure.
And it was, again, it's easy for us just to show up as volunteers, you know, do our gig and then walk away without the headaches. But it was some of the best times of my professional career.
Those are fun to be around. I did that very early in my stint with GCSAA, and it was really kind of foundational. Just, I mean, not only to be exposed to the kind of the people, and so many people that I've kept in touch with over the years, that was, you know, 23 years ago. Yeah. But just what it taught me as a complete newbie to to agronomy, to turfgrass science, to golf course management, to have that experience just really was amazing. And,
you know, Scott, it's eye-opening. And I think one of the things, you know, cause we have a lot of people in Envue and really any company, you know, we now have, you know, whether it's marketing or sales or whatever, especially, you know, higher up in the company, you have a lot of people with not as much turf experience, or in some cases, no turf experience. And I think, you know, spending a week volunteering on a golf course for a tournament, that would be eye opening for folks.
Yeah.
In lots of ways, good and bad.
Yeah, I mean, it's you see everything. You see the good, the bad. You see the camaraderie. You see the hard work. You see the finished product. You see how the role that they play and how it connects to the, you know, in my instances, the professional side of the game. It's just, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And we try to do that with new employees at GCSAA, not always with tournament prep, but you know, what part of your orientation is a day in the life is getting in there and stepping foot in a maintenance facility and seeing what goes on, and those kind of things are invaluable and really makes you appreciate the job of the superintendent. And from what we do is obviously to support them, and you can't do it without understanding what their day-to-day lives are like. So it's a great experience. So well, listen, I want to take a quick break here. We'll pay some bills. Maybe we'll pay your salary too. I'm not really sure, because this is a sneak preview for everyone. This ad's going to be for Envue. So we'll do that, and we will come back with more with Zach Riker right after this.
We'll return to this episode in a minute, but now a word from Envue, which is committed to working with golf course superintendents to accomplish great things on the course every day. The company has the expertise and innovative solutions to help you navigate turf challenges year-round while achieving the most consistent playing conditions possible. During the high heat of summer, both biotic and abiotic stresses can be problematic for your turf. That's why StressGuard brand fungicides, including Tartan StressGuard fungicide, go beyond disease control to help ensure greener and denser turf grass when it's most critical. Tartan controls a variety of foliar, stem, and root diseases, enhances turf health, has contact and systemic properties, and is preventative and curative. The end result is premium turf that's lush, green, and ideal for play. Another challenge for warm season turf is take all root rot, which was originally thought only to be a threat during the shoulder seasons. Recent research, however, has shown it's actually more prevalent when the soil temperatures are between 77 and 86 degrees Fahrenheit, which is most of the summer. Turfgrass managers will be able to get ahead of that with Resilia Root Health Solution when it becomes available later this fall. A first of its kind, Resilia safeguards roots from all destructive soil-borne pathogens for up to 21 days, and most up to 28 days. With Resilia, you can protect your roots and keep your turf healthy and playable all season long. Always read and follow label instructions, and remember that not all products are registered for use in all states. And finally, a reminder about the Green Start Academy, the leadership and development program for assistant superintendents co-hosted by Envue, John Deere, and Rainbird. Assistants will have the opportunity to make lasting connections and learn from respected industry professionals and leaders. Visit us.envue.com/green-start-academy for more information. Our thanks again to everyone at Envue for their support of the GCSAA podcast. And now back to this episode.
All right, welcome back. We're still pleased to be joined by Zach Riker with Envue, Green Solutions Team Specialist for them. And we spent the first part of the podcast really kind of talking about what the Green Solutions Team is, how it works with golf course superintendents, customers in the field. Got to talk a little bit about your career.
Zach. And as you mentioned, you know, your favorite part is getting out there and being in the field with superintendents. And so I want to kind of start our second part here, just by kind of turning some time over to you and just let's talk current events. I'm curious, and this is one of the things I've enjoyed in some previous conversations we've had with NVU staff, is just what you're seeing in the field. What are superintendents most dealing with? I hear some of that, you know, just in my role with GCSAA, but there when superintendents are running into problems on their golf courses, they're not calling me for solutions. I'm hoping they're maybe looking I'm hoping they're looking for stories, and maybe just to get a little bit of assistance, they'll turn to the pages of GCM, but for real help, they're turning to someone like you. So what struck you about this season, this growing season, and what's been kind of maybe, I guess, the top thing on your list of, man, this is something that seems to be a common challenge for turf grass managers in the field this summer?
Yeah, I don't think it really matters. I think every year, just the unpredictability of everything. Okay. Yeah, we know that labor is bad. I mean, you know, but, right. You know, for instance, a big chunk of my territory this year suffered through winter kill.
Right.
Zoysia, you know, here in Nebraska, we get it almost dang near every year on the greens with the power. But, you know, the warm season grass lost a bunch of Bermuda grass and Zoysia grass, the winter kill. And so then that changes everything in terms of, you know, can we find sod? Can we find sprigs? Then what do we do for weed control afterwards? Then, you know, this fall, now I got to think about poa control and some of our pre-emergent herbicides we can't put down over that new. It just changes everything. And then you get a summer like this with 100 and zillion degrees out there. I look at us, we're almost like engineers. You know, we have to prepare, or we have to build the space shuttle for the worst case scenario,
sure,
even though it might not happen. And that's hard. And so what I'm seeing now, it's all got to do with soil, root pathogens, any kind of compromise in the soil, whether it's drainage, primarily drainage or thatch or poor construction or, you know, traffic compaction, whatever. Root pathogens are now, in my opinion, the number one pest out there. Well, poa is always the pest, but root pathogens, whether it's in the warm season grasses, spring dead spot, or mini ring, or take all root rot, Pythium root rot, cool season grasses, again, Pythium root rot, summer patch. Those are the ones they start infecting early in the year, and then they don't show their ugly head until the weather changes. Great. And so, you know, right now with extended 100 degree temperatures, and if you're either fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to get some of the rain, you know, warm season grasses or cool season grasses just can't take this. And then it takes about this much of a pathogen to cause the problem.
Right.
And you have problems that you've never seen before. So it's just the uncertainty. And, you know, and as our weather changes, I mean, I think we're on the tip of the spear in terms of weather changing. We can let the idiots in Washington figure out what the causes are. But the changing weather, you know, our falls are longer, our winters are more extreme, right, our springs, in some cases, they're earlier, some cases, they're non-existent. So they're all changing. And so I am seeing goosegrass well in Nebraska. I'm seeing goosegrass pushing north through Iowa and Minnesota. I'm seeing crabgrass throughout the Portland and places like that. And so our pests are doing their job. They're expanding. And then, you know, nematodes, you know, both us and Syngenta have come up with a new nematicide over the last 5 years or so. And so now we're starting to get a better grasp on nematodes. And, you know, we always knew they were a problem in the South, but my highest nematode numbers are from Traverse City, Michigan.
Wow.
Who would have thought?
Yeah.
You know, and those are, you know, with a, you know, a growing season that's about 5 months long, 6 months long, and we have nematode numbers off the charts. And so it's lots of uncertainty out there, and things are changing. quickly.
And that's got to be hard for, I mean, superintendents obviously want to be in control and they want to be able to prepare as much as possible, but with uncertainty of those levels, it must make it super difficult. And you started off talking about the winter kill, and I have been noting that down in parts of Oklahoma and into, I guess, northern Texas. And those are areas that are not used to that, but there are some courses there. I think they're in year three, maybe year four of significant winter kill. That's just put them behind the eight ball before they, they've even entered the heart of their spring season.
And the problem is, anytime you have winter kill one year, and then by the time you get it reestablished, it's not really established going into the winter of the next year. And then if you get a cold, dry winter or cold, wet winter, or you get early or late, that's the bad thing about winter kill is there's, essentially three, maybe four different causes of it. And so, like up here, we normally get desiccation, but then in Arkansas, where your son is, they got all sorts of crown hydration in some of the areas, but then they got desiccation in other areas. And so it will just pull our hair out. Causes us to pull our hair out. But the long-term issue is you reestablish it, and then it's not established by the time next winter comes along. Everybody wants to play on that turf. You're trapping it too early. It's unhealthy going into the next winter, and then it tends to repeat itself by no fault of anybody, other than we're just hoping that the next winter isn't as bad.
Do you see different levels of damage based on? I mean, because obviously, you'll see cool season turf grasses kind of more bent grasses moving further south, and that's more of a playability question with certain golf courses. Is it worse on different as the lines blur? I guess the zones blur. Are you seeing more issues with certain types of things in terms of, say, cool season turf grasses moving to the south and things of that nature? Or is it kind of a indiscriminate damage?
Yeah, it's, whenever we move any kind of turf grass out of its most well-adapted zone, we're going to push the envelope, and typically as humans and typically as male humans, we want to do stupid stuff. And yes. So we do, we move things out of where they should be. And so we move bedgrass down to deep Texas, for instance, and, you can grow it down there, but it's going to take a lot of inputs. We can, grow zoysia grass up in Lincoln, Nebraska, if you want, but it might not survive the winter. And so that's the price you pay. And so whether it's naivety or whether it's ego, we should know better than put grasses where they don't belong.
Well, there's plenty of options now too with turf grasses, especially on greens that are more suited for the warmth of the Southwest or the Central Plains or wherever. So breeding is obviously getting us to a point where we have some more options where they are better suited for those to get the kind of quality putting surfaces that a lot of places are.
In my opinion, the cool season grasses, we have such good fungicides and nematicides now. We can really keep these cool season grasses alive, but really deep into the south relatively easily. I mean, obviously, we're going to have to, use a fair amount of fungicides and nematicides and so on. But it's the warm season grasses and winter kill, or even the cool season grasses, winter kill, there's just not a lot you can do about it other than winter watering or covers. Right. But when winter kill extends out of where it normally is, then people are just cannot be prepared for it.
Yeah. It's a killing thing. And yeah, you mentioned, I know the Tulsa area got hit pretty good this winter, and that's multiple years in a row down there, having talked with the folks of Southern Hills in the run-up to PGA.
Yeah, and your son in Arkansas, they took a whoop in some of the areas down there. And even zoysia grass lawns in Atlanta took a whooping. Yeah. So it's places you wouldn't expect, and on grasses you wouldn't expect. The zoysia, in most cases, I think would be pretty winter tolerant. So, but you know, the interesting thing is whether it's damage in the winter or damage in the summer, or what we want to point as a biological problem, there's nothing that works by itself now. It's always, there's always multiple straws involved,
right?
In breaking the camel's back, and usually it's traffic, moisture, it's some kind of unhealth, whether it's traffic, moisture, you know, poor establishment, you know, diseases or something working late in the winter, or, you know, there's always something else going on. We want to be quick to point it at one cause, but there's always something that almost always something that compromised that turf going into that period that caused major problems.
Well, I've enjoyed our conversation about winter, the extent, because as we sit here and record this today, most of the continental United States, and there are obviously going to be outposts that are probably going to have a lot of real estate interest here in the not too distant future. But
I'm going to my weather channel right now. Right now, it's feels like 107 here.
Yes, we are. Yeah, I'm looking at my watch. It only says 93. Now, we've had a little cloud cover today in Kansas City, but yeah, I think our heat index was 119 yesterday. So, but yes, right as we record this, most of the country is dealing with extreme levels of heat, and it's, I think, more so than just the extremities of what we're experiencing. It's really going to be the length of time. This appears to be, in some parts of the country, it has already been a long lasting event. For where you and I live here in the Midwest, we are on the front edge of this, and it does appear like it's going to stick around at least for the foreseeable future. So is there anything agronomically that superintendents and turf grass managers have to do, or at this time of year, are you just nursing your turf grass through, and does it create maybe more for kind of what you and Envy do, does it create any vulnerabilities long term that superintendents should be aware of?
Yeah, I think and right now, and you know, most of the superintendents have been through at least short periods like this before. The key is really do no harm. You know, don't do anything on whether it's cool season grasses or warm season grasses that causes extra stress. You know. Take the mowers off the greens, use rollers instead if you have to go for green speed. And, you know, maybe just reduce those standards a little bit. And, you know, protect your workers at all. Number one, protect your workers. And so just, you know, desperate times require desperate measures. And so maybe now's the time, just, you know, instead of that 11 and a half stiff meter reading, maybe 10 and a half is okay.
Yeah.
You know, so... and then just make sure you're protected for anything in the soil, whether it's warm season grasses or cool season grasses, and just do no harm. And the guys that I really feel bad about is the ones that have either reclaimed water or poor water sources.
Right.
That adds a whole other level of stress that there's not a lot of answers for. So. Right. Protect your turf as best you can in terms of culture practice and in terms of root pathogens are the things that we're most concerned about.
Are there anything that superintendents can do in the run up to these summer, if these sorts of weather events, these extremes become more common, are there things superintendents can do to prepare their turf? Is it just about growing the healthiest, strongest turf possible to prepare it for when these extremities come, whether it's heavy rainfall, whether it's extreme cold, extreme heat? Is that the biggest key that superintendents can focus on?
Scott, I cover 22 states. I'm now convinced that is the only thing we can do. And we've been talking about it for years, but you know, in the cool season world, when it comes to farrier ring and summer patch, you know, you really, and nematodes in the cool season world, once that 2-inch soil temperature gets to be about 60-ish degrees, start making those monthly applications for rutabaga, summer patch. It might not be the summer that you're going to need that application, but I'd rather be protected. And now I'm at the point that superintendents reducing the amount of stress that they have on themselves and they have on their families and their jobs, that is really, really important. So making those early applications on cool season grasses makes sense. And same thing for warm season grasses. We now know that Pythium is working almost all year long. Take all root rot is working earlier. Nematodes are, you know, almost around the clock, 12 months a year, depending on where you live. So, intense applications, unfortunately, is one of the best ways that we can help protect ourselves. And obviously, you want to maximize the culture and maximize the drainage and the soils and so on. But these temperatures, this climate, it's not going to get any easier for us to manage turf.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably stretches like these that make you look back to your days in Dyersville and glad that you maybe chose the path of
The one thing I figured out, Scott, is that all the places that I really get to go and see how grass is growing in these places, I figured out that Eastern Iowa might be the best place to grow grass. And
you had the ideal upbringing in that area. So
my mom is 97. I don't think she's going to pass until I come home I'm the superintendent of Dyersville Golf and Country Club.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that's going to happen. So it's a waiting game between her and I.
That's right. Well, Zach, I appreciate your time today. I'm going to give you some of our final shots here. Just real quick questions. Let you answer really quickly. I think you gave this away earlier, but first off, what's your favorite thing to do away from the job?
I am an avid bow hunter, not very successful. And I'm also an avid fly fisherman.
Okay.
Love to fish.
Something in common with our British Open champion, Open Championship winner,
yes. Brian Harman.
His bow hunting kind of came up during his post round.
Love to do it. Not very successful at it, which is fine. Being on the stand at dawn is plenty successful for me.
As we talked about your background, you have lots of college loyalties to tugging at you. Are you an Iowa State fan versus a Nebraska or Purdue fan, or do you just keep those at arm distance and don't reveal that?
I'm primarily an Iowa State and Purdue fan primarily, but Nebraska. I haven't become a member of the cult out here in Nebraska, but I watch them pretty dang often too, and so.
I thought that was a state law up there. You had to.
It's everything's good until they play each other.
Yeah.
When Nebraska and Iowa State play each other, maybe a bowl game, or I should say Nebraska and Purdue play each other, then it gets a little bit more difficult. So, but it's pretty easy to root for any one of those three.
We've been fortunate enough to form some connections up in Lincoln and around there. So I've gotten a glimpse into the fandom there. And as a Kansas State fan myself, that was back in the Big 12 days. That was the early Big 12 days. That was a little more heated than it is nowadays. So,
And I was part of the Big 8 back in the day.
Yes. I grew up with that too. Sounds like we're getting one of those teams back. Colorado sounds like they're coming back to the
what comes around goes around.
That's right. What's your favorite? You have been a part of the numerous GCSA conferences and trade shows as an instructor and whatnot, as an attendee now, as someone with NBU. What's your favorite conference and trade show city?
San Diego. Yep.
Beautiful. They're all nice. They all have their advantages, but San Diego's beautiful.
They're all nice. San Diego's just so easy to get into. And, you know, the convention center is almost walking distance from the airport. It's a nice place to be in February.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's probably the number one thing. Well, and you talked about your golf game, so I'll finish with this. If you had a chance to tee it up, any bucket list golf courses? You've obviously got to visit a lot of probably great places. Any place you just would be die to play?
The best thing about being on all these golf courses, Scott, I don't ruin them by playing. I really can't narrow it down because there's so many good golf courses, and you know, everywhere I go, the superintendents are so great and they're so open and so welcoming. I will not pick any favorites. I love them all.
Well, yeah. I can totally support that statement. After the story of walking up 18 at Pebble Beach, and I'm like, it's the whole Good Walk Spoiled thing from Mark Twain. Yep. It was a pretty awesome experience. And if I was trying to hack a ball around that tree in the middle of the 18th fairway, I'm not sure it would have been quite a fun walk.
And you know, Scott, growing up on a small 9-hole course, that still occupies a large part of my heart. The small 9-hole courses out in the country, love them. Absolutely love them.
Yeah, the game holds charms in many different forms. So
yes, it does. Yep.
Well, Zach, I appreciate your time today. I've enjoyed the conversation. I think the listeners will too. And it's always great to catch up with you and catch up with your colleagues at MVU. We appreciate this the support for the podcast, and glad we're able to do this. And we will. I know we'll see each other very soon, and then we'll catch up down the road. And it's. Appreciate your time. Zach Ryker with InView is our guest on this episode of the GCSA podcast. Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it.
Well, that's it for episode 54 of the GCSA podcast. Big thank you for me to Zach Ryker from InView for joining us and sharing a little bit about his career and what he's seen in the field this year as a member of InView's Green Solutions team. Remember, you can always learn more about the company, which is, of course, a sponsor of this podcast, by heading over to us.inview.com and clicking on the Turf and Ornamentals Management tab at the top of the page. Got plenty in the works for future episodes of the podcast, and that includes the video version, which is available on GCSA TV and the association's YouTube channel. So be on the look for all of that. But for now, I'll sign off with a thank you to podcast editor Evan Shapiro, to the fine folks at InView for their ongoing sponsorship of the podcast, to the GCSAA Board of Directors and my coworkers at GCSAA headquarters in Lawrence, Kansas. And of course, my thanks to each of you for subscribing, downloading, and listening and or watching. Until next time, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll catch up again soon on the next episode of the GCSAA podcast.